DOC says that control units are necessary to detain members of, quote, security threat groups, a vague prison term for gangs. Control unit critics say that the, quote, security threat label is often arbitrarily applied based on one's racial identity or outspoken criticism of prison policy. Jim Austin with the JFA Institute has worked with the Ohio and Mississippi DOC to clearly define what behavior warrants detention in solitary confinement.
Well, since we started working in Mississippi, we've implemented a number of reforms that have served to reduce the number of people in the ADSEG units from over 1,000 to 130. And we did that by basically requiring the state to be very specific about who would go into those units and how long they would stay. And we've done this without jeopardizing the safety to staff or the other inmates.
Hakeem Shaheed, who spoke on a panel of survivors of solitary confinement, says he was placed in a maximum security facility at Marion Federal Penitentiary in Illinois after he criticized prison conditions in Terre Haute, Indiana. Through bogus incident reports, Shaheed says he was kept there for more than 10 years.
The mind begins to eat off itself after a few years. The walls seem to close in. The smell in the cells, you smell concrete.
Following the September 11th attacks, Shaheed says that guards started harassing Muslim inmates and that he was severely beaten and had his Quran thrown on a spit-stained floor. He brought a lawsuit against the DOC, which led to the removal of 9 guards, and what he believes eventually led to Marion reducing its security level from maximum to medium.
My case, having been tortured and the amount of news media that came on it, broke the back of Marion's tradition of abusing, torturing, and in some cases, it is alleged, murdering inmates.
In addition to litigation, family support networks play a crucial role in challenging solitary confinement, according to Gail Muhammad, family organizer for the Stop Max conference.
Only means of survival for some of our loved ones is to visualize themselves at home. And the only way they can do that is if they stay connected to who is at home.
StopMax conference attendees strategized how to put an end to solitary confinement. Some vowed they would continue legal battles, and others said they would focus on networks to support prisoners during their incarceration and post-release. A coalition of Pennsylvania organizations said they would work to prevent the construction of a new supermax prison in their state. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Andalou Janal in Philadelphia.
1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 2, 2, free, 4, 4, 4, he's raw, up and down, like a seesaw, saw, I saw seashells at the seaside, side, oh, any problem, we ride, we provide, fight for the F-A-M-I-L-Y, family, it's me, I meet again, oh, yeah, yeah. This that vibe alive, wow, yeah, keep it up again, wow, yeah, make the crowd go nuts, yeah, gyal them shake their butts, oh, damn, sorry, if I'm being vulgar, I don't mean to be vulgar, I'm not no Shrekka ogre, like, oh gosh, my lord, we're back in again, back in with the action, me and me be breaking it down into fractions, who wants some affliction, you don't want a fraction, that's part of my faction, that's part of my team, oh damn, we gon' make it my dream, oh yes, we gon' enter the scene, damn, I don't need the fame to be famous, damn, I don't need the riches to be rich, damn, if you get it, then you get it, what I said, rich inside my body, enriching my head, I don't need that paper, I need the bread, I can divide and conquer just like Jesus, said. Damn. Oh, he sped the way fast. Damn, let me switch it up. 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 2, 2. Free, 4, 4, 4. He's raw.
What a way to start the show.
Yeah.
Ja, velkommen til In The Lake Special.
Vi tager den lige først på dansk, og så ruller vi over i noget engelsk.
Mm.
Til dem derude, der er lidt forvirret over stemmesammensætningen i dag. I studiet er Agnete fra Boogie.
Og Marta fra Fast Stilling. And we have a very special guest with us
today. The most special guest.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe the most special, actually.
Yeah.
Because the track that we just heard, when we started doing Boogie, we kind of started out the episodes by playing the tracks that we'd been most excited about from 2021.
Yeah.
And this was the first track that started out the entire program series. And with us today, we have no other than Brother May.
Hey. Whoa, I was holding my breath there.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, and in addition, you might be one of the people that have been played the most over the past year, because I know that we're sort of like a trio of shows. There's Boogie, there's Festilling, and then there's Onstas Mix. And I know Onstas Mix, they've played the song as well. Mm. And I don't think in Festilling we've played this song, but we've played a couple of other songs by you. So maybe we'll come back to that later. Mm. Yeah.
And we're just so this is also a massive shout out to Frederick from the third show, who couldn't be here but who is kind of the initiator.
Yeah,
amazing.
He's in Iceland, so what can you do?
Yeah.
Yes, Frederick, big yourself up, bro. Thank you, man. Yes.
Yeah,
that's love.
And also, so obviously there's a big love for Brother May at the Lake Radio, but for those of you who happen to not know who you are, maybe just a short introduction that you are a rapper from London. Mm-hmm. And you are one of the founders of the Curl Collective.
Yeah.
And you're in Copenhagen for a show that you played last night, For Another Life.
Yeah, yeah.
An amazing festival that both Martha and I attended.
Yeah. And maybe we should say a little bit about Another Life for those who don't know about this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is going to be like a little bit... a few steps of like explaining before we actually get to the show, but I don't have like a little text about Another Life or anything prepared, so I'm going to do my best to explain what it is.
Sure, it's good.
It's a new organization here in Denmark who aim to highlight and showcase female and minority music acts within the music business. Is that how they have like a really like, good wording that I don't have?
I think it's just minoritized.
Minoritized. Really.
But they focus a lot on like a broad term and a lot
the broad
of
term, exactly.
intersectionality.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's not just gender. It's like it's on a variety.
For sure
of,
not. It just always gets confusing because when you talk about a female, you have
it's
a little
like,
text.
Yeah, little text here
because females are like 50%, I guess.
Yeah,
but in the music business, not so much. But this is like
just
a long novel.
A bit
novel.
Of what they done, like just so this paragraph here, maybe.
Do you want to read it out loud because they wrote this for you?
Yeah. So
here's Brother May explaining what Another Life is.
Yeah, so Sophie, the co-founder, is the co-founder and project manager of Another Life Community, which is a non-profit association working to increase and a better representation and improve conditions for women and minoritized individuals and groups in the Danish music industry.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And they just hosted like this really nice festival yesterday. I honestly had the time of my life.
It was packed. It was so full of stuff, and it was... people, it was just such a good vibe.
Mm.
But so many acts and so much different stuff as well. I want to mention as well, because for those interested, you can become a member of Another Life.
Yeah.
It's 250 kroners yearly. As a member, you get an invitation to their general assembly and they get a quarterly newsletter and more. So I think that's a good deal.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Good incentive as well. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, man.
And you just played such an amazing show, May. So
thank you.
Really, really thrilled to have you in the studio. And
I'm thrilled to be here. Like, great company. Yeah.
And for any listeners who don't know either Festilling or Boogie, I guess the next hour or 2 hours will just be a lot of listening to music and conversations
talking
to you, May, about what inspires you and
like
the collectives that you are part of and your community and. Your way of listening to music.
Yeah,
it's going to be a little bit of a journey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think because Boogie's main focus is new music, and quite early on you said that in Festilling we play a lot of old music. I don't know if we don't.
No, that's a lie.
But
I take it back.
in this context, maybe that's like sort of a good frame. It's like old and new.
Yeah.
Maybe something borrowed something blue.
So, yeah, yeah. It's that festive season where everyone's getting married.
We've been talking about everyone getting married this year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, something old, something new. Great. Mm. I'm into that.
Yep.
And just for context, the first song that we listened to was obviously Up Down Seesaw.
Yeah.
By which is, Brother Me and Mika Levy.
Yeah, yeah, yep. Which is something old, I guess.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
yeah. Right in the middle.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah. So maybe, maybe that's a good starting point. And maybe we should talk about a little bit of your friendship with Mika, but also how with Curl.
Yep.
We want to know more about Curl.
Yeah, cool.
And then maybe we can play some music from Curl.
Yeah, great. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so where should I start? Should I start with Mika?
As far as I know, that was sort of how it started.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yep,
so
yep.
Start at the beginning.
Start at the beginning, right, yeah. So, yeah, me and Mika, yeah, so we met in like 2005, I want to say, 2005, and we met in this internet cafe on Whitechapel Street. It's not actually in Whitechapel, but it's called Whitechapel Street, and it's in Old Street. And I remember just walking in to the internet cafe to upload maybe some songs on my MySpace or just to check how my MySpace is doing and like check if I had any messages, you know, because the internet weren't at the booming stages them times. It was more like cafe and your phones didn't really have that great internet. You know, you couldn't do as much as you can now on your phone back then. So yeah, but yeah, cut a long story short, I went and sat down and saw Meeks, and obviously I had no idea who they were. They never had no idea who I was. I just grabbed a chair next to them and I saw they were on MySpace too. I just like had a little cheeky look at their screen whilst they were like surfing the net or whatever. And I was like, you know, oh, I'm May, I do music. Like I just kind of budged them with my arm like, hey, like, you know, I'm May, I do music. Like check out my MySpace. I think I was just promoting myself, like shameless plug, like, you know, like.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, yeah, just like shameless plug, like, hey, you know, and then. Yeah, fortunately, they were into what I was doing and they were like, they listened on the spot and they were like, well, yeah, let's exchange numbers. And I got a studio, like I live just up the road. And yeah, we met up the same day and done some recordings, some freestyles and stuff.
That's quite magical, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Isn't and it? We've been going ever since, I guess. Mm. I've been a bit more on and off than they have. They've been like more super focused, like with Mikachu in their shapes and touring and, you know, doing a lot of music. But they would always send me bits. They would always send me music and I would always just write to it, or we would meet up and write. And we'd done a few shows ourselves as well. We had like a little collective in the beginning called Filthy Friends. We done like a Filthy Friends mixtape.
Nice.
Just the two of you or
it was like
else?
a few of us, yeah. My brother was involved. My brother Baker Trouble. A few like Kezia was involved. I think Terza was involved. Quez. Yeah, quite a few of us. They're the names I remember. Excuse me if I've forgotten anyone, but it was like 05, like, yeah. Like 16 years ago, like, yeah. You know, but yeah, that's what I remember of those days. And yeah, we just stayed friends, carried on making music up until now, I guess, till right now. Yeah.
Going strong.
Yeah. Going strong. And then I met Cobby a little while after.
Cobby Say.
Yep. Yeah. Cobby Say. I met Cobby. I want to say 09 maybe, 010, could have been earlier. I wonder what he would say. He'll probably
we'll
say.
We'll ask him next week when he's playing Copenhagen.
Yeah,
another
ask
live,
him.
as well.
Yeah. Ask him.
Yeah.
He would definitely. He's really sharp in the memory area. So yeah, he'll know. But we linked up at a house party, I think, in Loughborough Junction. Mika was putting on a like house party, and invited her friends down to play, and they were DJing while I was playing, and then Kobe was DJing with Meeks. That's the first time I think I met him in person, but I knew his big brother Quez from the kind of times that I met Mika. I met Quez a few times, and we just kind of carried on working until fast forward, Curl was born. It was born, I think Curl was always something that was gonna happen, I think, like, because we had collectives, we had like always trying to build a crew, or just having like, there was a group of us around that all had a like-mindedness in music and was all really passionate about music and stuff. So it would have come about some way or another. But the way that it did come about was great, because I kind of had this project called May and Meeks that me and Meeks done together, and I kind of wanted to shop it about a bit. And I don't know, after being like not turned down by labels, but just like, you know, a bit disheartened because of how much kind of work I had to put in to kind of get the attention of the label.
Yeah.
And get something significant out of them.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like, you know what, this is getting long. This is some joke thing, Meeks. Like, this is what we should do. We should pattern it up like this. Like, boom, 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 boom. I was breaking it down. And then Meeks was like, do you know what, mate? If we're going to do like a independent thing and start up a label, or do like try and drop it ourselves, self-release on our own imprint, we should involve Kobe, because Kobe's really on point with that. It was like, yeah, we should get Kobe on board, because Kobe's really on point. And Kobe already had the name Curl, or Curly Whirly, or something like Curling, or like something like there was a few different names that we had to kind of pick out of a hat which one we most liked. And then we all agreed on Curl Recordings. And we were like, yeah, Curl Recordings, that sounds dope, that sounds sick. And all right, cool, we'll drop the first release, May and Meeks, on Curl Recordings. And that was like 2016, kind of February times was when it was born, like kind of registered and stuff.
So around your birthday?
Madly, like, you know. I hope Kobe agrees with this, because he'll definitely know the date. He'll be like, mate, it weren't around your birthday, it was in March. Like, yeah, but I think it was around my birthday.
Well, memory's subjective.
You know. So, but anyway, I guess it was around February for me. And the record actually dropped in March, May and Meeks, like the Curl 001 release or whatever. And in March, I just remember being super happy, gas, like, yeah, this label's up. And yeah, from there we were like, we were playing, we played some shows, kind of promoted it. We got some good feedback from, like, you know, Fader Magazine, The Wire, Dazed, you know. After that, we decided to do, like, put on shows. Like, we started putting on as Curl. We weren't playing live together straight away. We were like just a label that would put on shows at a place called Rye Wax in Peckham. And at this place we would have a residency. Well, we would later on be residents, but every Sunday we would put on a show and we would invite our friends down.
Nice.
And Kobe would perform, I would perform, Meeks would perform. At them times we weren't really performing together. Maybe like Meeks would DJ for me, or Kobe would DJ for me, and I'll just like do my set, play the May and Meeks stuff, and Kobe would play his stuff. Transport for London, that was released on Whitey's. Yeah, it was really, really that good. Like, yeah, good times. Like, and then it's just carried on going from strength to strength. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, we just, one day we got, I think Meeks got asked to perform with Ryuichi Sakamoto.
Wow.
And I'm not sure what they intended to do, but they knew that they had a label, you know, and May Cobbs, like, and it was like, yeah, why don't we do something together? Like, you know, and it was just like, oh, what have you got in mind kind of thing? And it was like, yeah, why don't we just perform each other's songs, like, you know, and see how it kind of goes kind of thing. And I could invite my friend George, because at the time I was friends with George Friendly Ramsey, and we had flown just recently to Italy with Rebecca Salvadori, who is part of TQS as well. And yeah, then so I asked George to join, and I think Kobe asked Alpha Maid to join, because I think they were friends with Alpha Maid, or Mika or Kobe, one of them two. Yeah, yeah. My memory's just being like, whoa, like reliving it. Like, you know, I'm like,
it's a bit family tree.
Yeah. So yeah. We kind of, it was all this back and forth of asking people to join. And then, yeah, so it ended up being five of us, me, Mika, Kobe, Leisha, and George. And yeah, we played the show, and yeah, it was like Mika and Leisha was on guitars, Kobe was on bass and like synth, George was like on a cup with water poems, like, you know, nice. little trinkets and a tape recorder that would play, or a radio that would be tuned to the AM, so it would play talk shows and like all these weird, like, you know, sounded like the 70s or something. Like, it was pretty, yeah, like pretty
the,
sick.
The frequencies.
Across the frequencies, yeah. He would just move across, and he would say poems like, you know, these crazy radical poems that was like, that would have the crowd like, what the fuck? Like, you know, like, like he was shaving in a bath, and he went too close and cut his privates off, like, basically, like fucking, like, and I shave my balls off, and he would be like really like expressionate and wild, like, and I was just like, I was blown away on stage, like, oh, that's God. How the Curl concert started. Like, they were like fucking so out there, and I remember playing, having just like a floor tom and like a bin, like a tin bin or something, like, and just playing, playing like,
busking.
Yeah, yeah, just like busking, like on stage, like, mad, like, it was crazy. And yeah, and then, you know, so we done that. It was a success. It was great, and we were like, yeah, da 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 da. And then we played 10 Tricks, Point Never.
Yeah.
And that was at the Barbican. The Ryuichi show was in Canning Town somewhere, at some big warehouse, kind of derelict, kind of, you know, space, like open space kind of thing. Like, really warehouses and kind of derelict, old, like, old buildings that ain't being used but are just really expansive, like, in size and stuff. So, yeah. But the 10 Tricks... we played at the Barbican, and it was the same kind of setup, the same people, the same wildness again. Yeah. And then, yeah, we from there, I think we rehearsed one day. We took out a rehearsal space, like, maybe we should rehearse this, because it's getting kind of good. And, like, you know, if we could rehearse this now, it might be like, we could actually probably go somewhere with this. Like, you know,
yeah.
Those weren't the exact words, but I guess we were probably thinking, you know, it's worth a rehearse, you know? And yeah, that's when I played on the full kit, you know, a full kit, full drum kit. Mm. It, all the busking days were over. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, oh, this is, you know, this is a step up. Ha ha.
Did you have a background in drumming? Or
yeah, do you know what? That's a good question. I kind of did, actually. My uncle used to drum in a band with my dad and my other uncles, weirdly. Like, they were like a reggae band.
Yeah.
And they, like, used to drum back in the day. So at around about 8, 9, he used to just show me like how to hold the sticks cross-handed and just basic beat. And I kind of didn't drum again ever. Like, because I never ever had my drum kit, or I never usually went to my uncle's that much on the weekends to drum with him. Mm. But my other cousins really got good, and they learned like really well because they were taking like lessons from my uncle Shay. And I kind of just remembered how to play, and just was like, when I got on the drums, I just took off like a fish to water, basically. Like a fish to water. And I was just like, yeah, this feels great. We just started drumming, and our set just grew and stuff. And and then we from there, we started involving different people from Curl. Because how the collective was working, it was like whoever we've kind of made music with, played a show with, had some real correspondence with in the musical space, they would be part of the collective kind of thing. And then they'll be invited to various shows, or like people that we called in the early days to go to play at Rye Wax. Yeah. Where we had our Sunday slot every Sunday or every second Sunday, just for like months on end. And then it was decided, and then Ryuchi came from that, and then it went to 103, and then it went to this place, and then that place. And then it was like, Mount Kimby, and then Arca, and then this person, and then, oh my gosh, and then all this stuff. And then it was like, oh, all right, you know,
so it also sounds like you sort of, some of the names that you're mentioning, some of them are probably pretty unknown to the listeners, but some of them fairly famous.
Yep.
So
extremely famous, I would say.
Yeah. Mm. But we can never talk on behalf of the listeners, but to us, at least in the studio. But, and these are my words, not yours, so stop me if I'm not right. But I think, like, my impression of Curl Recordings is also like it's sort of based on a bit curiosity, and it spans from like the most obscure to like very sort of like almost like radio pop hits, like very accessible.
Literally.
And then also like playing like a weird warehouse, and then playing the Barbican. It's like very quickly it took on this sort of like persona of it of its own that like contained everything in one package.
In one package, and that wasn't,
but like no cliches almost.
It weren't thought out. It weren't like, it weren't something that we sat and was like, this is what we should do, and then we should go on tour. And it just happened all naturally, all organically, all like no force, no like, oh, you have like no front man, you know, no one was like, you know, play this this way, you know. It would be like, yeah, this is my song, this is how it sounds on the record, but live we can change it up. I could do it to Mika's beat, and they could, I could rap my lyrics to their beat, which was the case with blue shit. Blue Shit. And In For The Kill. So the song In For The Kill that's on my record, Orotype Orange, is done over Blue Shit instrumental, which is like dum 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 dum, like that. And then and it's just like, we just go in for the kill, and then it's like singing like, we just go in for the kill, we just go in.
Is this something we should listen to? We could put it on, you know.
I'm not sure if it even exists on record, because it's like, it's just live. Like, that's what I was trying to explain, that live, we would switch it all up.
We could almost do like a remake.
Yeah.
We could listen to Blue Shit.
Yeah.
And we could rap.
And I could rap In For The Kill. Literally. Yeah. I'm up for that. You could, you could run Blue. You could run Blue, and I could do In For The Kill. And that's how we done that. Yeah. And yeah, it just went from strength to strength. And then Curl is just like, there's a lot of people involved. It's like, there's people that do installations. There's like Hannah Perry that shot Kobe's, that shot Terza and Terza's video. And with the one that features Kobe saying it. It's like a romantic
Devotion?
Video. Devotion.
They've done two songs God. Together, right?
Yeah.
What's the other one? Hive Mind.
The album, the recent album, Color Grade.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
They're on, Kobe's on that as well.
Mm.
So there's Hannah Perry, and Hannah does these amazing installations. And then there's Akinola Davis, who's this amazing...
So amazing.
Director. Yeah. Who done the curl film, which was like mayonnaise corn and a cob in my car, which was like something that we kind of taught a bit. That's so funny that it was just, it's crazy. Yeah. And then, so, you know, then there's Akin. So many different walks of life. It's not just artists. It's not just, it's like, you know, and you don't have to just, we don't just take submissions of just music. You know, it could be a score. It could be a piece. It could be, you know, Mika, they uploaded a score onto the site where anyone could kind of feel free to perform, download the PDF.
Like open
and,
source.
Yeah. And, you know, I drop a lot of music with them. And, yeah, Kobe does that, done River, which is like a instrumental kind of album thing, you know, EP/album. And yeah, so it varies. It's not like one thing only, you know. And that's what Curl, to me, I don't know how Meek and Kobe see it, maybe pretty similar, but Curl is like, you know, the at sign or like the...
Yeah.
Mm.
It's like basically... Forever morphing.
I'm doing like a spiral
with my finger around the mic in the air. Yeah. And that's what Curl is. It's like ever interchanging, ever morphing, ever changing. It's not one thing. People like to ask me a lot, what is Curl or what genre of music is it? And I'm just like, I don't know. It's genre defying. There's no genre. There is no, you know, the best way to find out is to come down and see, I guess. Like, you know, that's like, without being egotistical or like, you know, like fucking wear the shit, like fucking come down and see this shit. It's more like if you fancy, if you've got a minute, if you feel like going to experience something different, then, or, you know, if you're curious enough to care enough to want to come down, then maybe that'll be the best way for you to kind of grasp the concept of what we're doing or where we are or who we are and, you know, I find it much more better when someone says what we are as opposed to me trying to explain it, because it's just so difficult.
But
to explain.
I think it's a really, really beautiful way of putting it, that the being curious enough to care enough, because that combines two really, really good approaches to listening to new music.
That's a great sentence.
If you have both like a care for what you're experiencing and also realize that the people who are actually performing have put a lot of time and effort into making these things or are caring enough to take the time to create it on the spot.
Yeah.
And also feel that curiosity.
Yeah.
I think that's a really, really like key approach that is not always practiced that much, because you're also very used to like a lot of promotion maybe within music and a lot of framing and a lot of storytelling and kind of stripping that away from the pure energy that it is to just create with people.
Exactly.
And that's also why I'm so drawn to maybe Curl, or like I really feel like it's a very honest connection
between
the music that's being made, and I feel like it mirrors what's happening like within a rehearsal space.
Yeah.
But just like in a super large scale.
Where the rehearsal
space is kind of everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. It's all the rehearsal space.
Yeah, I mean, and you can always be like meeting people, or you can be listening to a new song that you really vibe with, or get a new idea. And I just think yeah, practicing that regularly within a collective is a very, very beautiful thing. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah,
we should listen to something now.
Let's go.
Mm-hmm. We need music.
I'm into that. Yeah.
So,
should we go?
I mean, we could go In for the Kill.
Let's do it.
With Blue.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's something that I perform live and that doesn't exist online. Yeah.
Okay. So you ready for this very special
live rendition? Like, nice. Yeah.
Okay. Here we go.
Yeah. Mark, I spit the hard bars like this. Bars, I spit the heart. Spit that from the heart. Everything I do has to be so true. Sauce, it drips my bag. Look, Mark, I spit the hard bars like this. Bars, I spit the heart. Spit that from the heart. Everything I do has to be so true. Sauce, it drips my bag. Hickory dickory, I got the sauce. Look how it drip on me, drip on me. Look how it drip on me, drip on me. Hickory dickory, I got the sauce and it drip on me. Now she's all looking to lick on me. And I just rip it specifically. Specific, rip it, drip it, wrist work, it's work, it's smirk, skirt, skirt, it's smirk, shit, wow, piffing that loud. I got a spliff on me now. I got this piff ting. I got a spliff on me, yeah, smoking it literally. Look at my people, they stick with me, stick with me to the end differently. We was in Italy, chip, hickory dickory, now they're just looking so blind, cause the eyes shine, hickory dickory mice, free blind, run at that hickory, the clock it don't tick on me, tick tock, the clock it don't tick on me, tick tock, tick tock, the clock it don't tick on me, look at the watch it don't kick on me, look at me, ha, ha cha 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 cha. Ho. We just go in for the kill. 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 Yeah. We just go in for the kill. Yeah, we just go in for the kill. 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 We just go in for the, we just go in for the kill. We just go in for the kill, yeah. We just go in for the kill. We just go in for the kill. Kill, man, we just go in for the kill, G. Doggy fried, man. Shout out Meeks on the production. You know, shout out Kobe Say, shout out the whole collective, man. Shout out the gang. Cheers. It's me name.
Yeah. Something like that, basically. But it's like the tempo's a bit more different on live. Like the tempo's a bit more faster. But yeah,
that's the kind of vibe, like live, like, yeah.
That was pure magic.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
That was so special.
So beautiful. That was amazing.
Oh,
thank you so much. I feel so blessed.
Man, what? Thank you. Like, thanks. Yeah, thanks. I mean, thanks for having me. Like, I love it up here. This is great.
Yeah, it really took me back to seeing the concerts. The whole concerts were always like special moments, but this is something that maybe because I knew both of the tracks beforehand, it was really like listening to them together was a very... But yeah, you're right about the tempo, that it was a bit...
It
was maybe a bit faster, there were some drums.
There was drums. I was playing the drums and Meeks is on guitar and Cobby comes in with the bass. It sounds so much more better. But I had a recording on my laptop which I left, unfortunately.
We got this version.
It's like the same. It's the same
thing. More unique. This has not been done before.
This one, that was like the live from probably Blue Albie, right? From Blue Albie, Rough Dog. Maybe it was Blue Albie.
I think it's called Blue Alibi.
So it's the Blue Alibi one, and the one that I've got is a recording that I asked Meeks to send me for like a spoken word kind of piece that I'd done, which was like all my music but like super stripped back with just the chords and so no drums or nothing. And
nice.
It was, yeah, that was like pretty cool. Like it was like at a place called Ironworks for the TQS series, which was like TQS, they were putting on a series of shows within London in different spaces and with different artists, and I played there with Lucy Roughton. And George Finley Ramsey was there also. Sandro Masadia or Medusa was there playing as well, who is partners with Olivia Salvadori, which is Rebecca Salvadori's sister, big
it's
sister,
all connected.
And they put on this show, and actually Brian Eno was there as well. Which was that pretty sick. Like,
but he loved it.
Yeah, he did. He said he really loved it, and yeah, it was like spooky. I was kind of walking around like through the crowd, who was all sitting down, and I was like giving this performance that really laid back, like. Not how you usually see me, like super energetic and hyped. This was all stripped back and just like me and with a shirt on and just like some trousers and a cordless mic, like you know, and just the music, like playing one piece. So I wouldn't go back to the decks and stop the music or nothing and play the next song. It would be like one recording all the way through. And yeah, that was a moment as well. Like, so yeah. It kind of reminds me of this, but the version I've got is like the faster version that Meeks re-recorded for me on their guitar. It's all the same, all great. Anyway, I had fun.
I got quite curious about your background for rapping. Or it's also really nice to hear about Curl as a collective, but also for you, like as in, like how you got into making music and what sparked your interest.
We talked a bit about before the show. We wanted to know about what influences you, because in a way, your approach seems like it draws upon a lot of stuff, but it's also quite unique. Like again, it gets weird, but it also gets really accessible.
So that's a good question. Well, thanks for asking and being interested as well. Yeah, appreciate that. So it started from a really young age. I can remember being like 6 or 7, that I couldn't be older than them ages, like, and just my mum having a cable telly in our council flat in South London, like Pepys Estate, which is like Deptford area. For those who don't know, which is like Lewisham, South London. And it was like Mum used to leave the telly on, and I don't know how it was on MTV, but it was on MTV. And I remember seeing like Michael Jackson. Yeah, yeah, fortunate. Like, this is my calling. Like, you know, the universe put it on that channel for me, I guess. But yeah, I remember seeing Michael Jackson, Vanilla Ice, Madonna. Who else did I see? Those were the like main three that I can actually remember the songs that they were performing and stuff. And I just remember Rihanna, what the mum? What? Like, no, I was all like trying to, you know, I was like, no, this is crazy. Oh my God. Like, I was blown so away. Like, I said, no, this is my, this, I have to do this. This is what I want to do. I want to be on stage. I want to be doing music. This, I didn't even know what doing music meant. I didn't know you had to write your own music. I didn't know you had to compile your own, like get producers. I didn't know none of that. Like, I just knew that this is what I want. Like, you know, when you're a kid and you're just like,
oh yeah,
you're just like taken by something. So I was just like, man, like, I wonder how I'm going to do this. So it started off with me like listening to, having a heavy influence in rap. Like, my brother was more into jungle and the fast tempo, like like all that kind of all that mad shit, and I was just like, what the fuck, nah, this ain't me. Like, you know, like, I weren't really, even though it was from London, I was like, I don't know, maybe it's the way they marketed their music in America to London, just felt like that was just so in my face more, you know, and it was just like, that's kind of where I wanted to get to, kind of thing. And so I remember starting out as a rapper. Well, I thought I was a rapper, but I was definitely not a rapper. you know, I was like 10, 11. So I grew, more years grew. And then I kind of was in primary school. And
I'm sure you were still rapping.
Before, I was rapping in primary school, 100%, but it weren't my lyrics. It just, it weren't my material. It was like Biggie, it was like Tupac, it was like, you know, it was like Ice Cube.
And it's just your ghostwriters.
They were my ghostwriters. They were my ghostwriters. It was before I even heard about Jay-Z and other rappers like KRS-One and Kool G Rap, but before that, it was like, it was straight Biggie and Tupac. They were the most kind of famous and just like accessible for me. And so I used to have their music on a tape deck, like TDK cassette tape. And I have my own Walkman and stuff. And so I have my headphones on my Walkman.
Oh, you know, the Walkman era.
Damn, you know, where are them days gone? You know, there's no skipping of the CD, no jogging. Like, you know, you can throw it in the air almost.
Oh, yeah, holding your you can just hold it.
Holding your Discman completely level. What? Whose idea was this? This is crazy. We're going back, guys. We're going back. You know, we need to go forward. You know, so yeah, it was like, man, you know, it's crazy. Like, I just remember being like, man, I'm going back to Cali, and being like, man, like, you know, oh shit, when the la-la hits your lyrics, just sit your head so hard that your head can't fit you, either I'm with you or against you, for my adventure, back to LA I sent you, talking to the rap inventor, nigga with the game right, get the game right, spell my name right, B-R-double-G-R-E, iced out, me and Cicelero, all that type of shit, and I was like, fuck, like, this is the best, like, I had to pause each sentence, write it out, press play, get the next bit, write it out again, press play over the whole 16 bar, basically, and to get tight and to get like, to get my cadence or my diction, you know, or to get all of these things on point. I didn't know that it was called cadence or diction at the time, actually. I was just rapping with some of the best and just thinking, man, this is,
I'm rapping with this guy, like, I'm great. This is sick. Like, I used to think that I was so sick.
But you were, I mean.
Just to try that out, I used to like, be like, fuck, like. And then I'll just rap it back in time with
and
Biggie.
And it's still with you to this day.
Yeah,
so.
I'm like, I remember it. I remember, like, and my brother's friends used to be like, do the Biggie bar, like, push me and be like, do the bar, do the bar. And I used to be like, bro, he sounds like Biggie, he sounds like Biggie. Yeah. And that's because I was night and day practicing, making sure I sound tight. Like, you know, it was like, I finally kind of got to a stage, I think maybe 14 to 16, where I tried out writing my first lyric. But my first lyric was written by my friend called Ransom Bad Bones, who was part of Task Force. And Task Force was comprised of Chester P and Farmer G from Highbury. And they're like the best rappers in the world to me at the time, like from London. I couldn't believe that rappers existed like this in London. I was like, what, London? He's rapping like this? This guy's better than Eminem. I couldn't believe it. Oh. I was like, Chester P, like, man, this is crazy. This guy, like, for everything, he was just too much for me. Like, I was like, whoa. And so I started rapping with those guys. And then I started developing my rapping skill, learning about, you know, syllables, learning about the dictionary, learning about how reading really helps you with writing, you know, and just that, because you get all the information, you know. And then,
All of this really resembles, like, or it's just like such a thorough way of learning, like a craft. Like when an instrumentalist will be like a viola player or violin player will be practicing literally night and day to kind of, at first you get to know the instrument through like playing other people's work.
Thinking the same with visual art. Me being a visual artist, like also just like drawing or painting something that someone else has done to like make it look like this.
Imagine that. So, like, I swear. And it was exactly like that, like, you did, like, even tracing paper
exactly
or something, you know. And like with you, like practicing a viola or like practicing a piece for Mozart or, you know, Beethoven or whatever, like, you know. So it was the same with me with rap, like, or like music, like. And I was just like, man, like, so yeah, it just piqued my interest. I started writing and learning and just being like recording. And I don't know, I used to record with all my cousins and friends, and everyone just seemed to kind of drift away from music. And I kind of, I don't know, I just, maybe I just might have held faith. I don't know, like at the time I didn't know it was faith or whatever, but I just felt like one day, you get me, like I'm just going to keep doing this music until, you know, until I'm in a place where I'm happy, like, you know, because at this moment, this is just like bedroom bars. Like, this ain't going further than my front room. Like, you know, like my mum might hear my lyrics. And then, like, I'll be like, mum, hear this. Like, and she'll be like, yeah. And I'll be like, mum, no. I still got, I practiced this for ages. And it's just like, mum, man. Like, but luckily she was like that, because else I would have never got better. Like, you know, if she just lied to her son, I would have been like, I would have thought I was great when I was actually not great, you know. So
did your mom enjoy rap music as well?
Now she does, she comes to concerts and she did, like, but she used to always tell me, just keep stick to one concept, or try and make songs that have a concept, or, you know, like, don't be all over the place, don't be just talking about this one second, then talking about this, then talking about this, and then that, and then that. So I used to try and kind of keep concepts more and try and do more solid work and stuff, like. And it was kind of like to please my mum, but like also to please myself, that you know, that I can keep a concept or write about a love song, that just keeping, like, you know, like Lovers in Demand, or like, you know, love me like you do, love me, I couldn't pay you back in this lifetime, and anything you done for me, fine, this the last time, I think I said that the last time, you were done crying, you need a shoulder, the hair's mine. It's like that concept I need to carry on, like, and keep that strong, like. But before, I would probably start talking about, I don't know, like, just something totally different. Like, it might be that hook, that same hook, but on the hook, I might be talking about not love, like something else. Like, just weirdly, like, just because I didn't understand concepts, like,
at a certain point in my career when I was that young, just starting out, you get me?
Maybe so you've not felt the feelings
yet. I've not experienced it, so I didn't have the ammunition, you know, to talk, to release that, you know. So it just, that's what kind of first piqued my interest.
That's so amazing.
And then from there it was like, then later on I met Meeks and then this, that and the other, but I was already in a space. I was already doing like garage and grime, and I was like, I had like these songs that MC's could have never murked this suit. Got a little army, I move to your troop, leave blood trickling from your face to your boot. I'm a big boy with big guns to shoot, like MC's could have never murked this suit. Like, and these times I was never like, you know, I weren't really on it like that, but you know, just the fiction of it, I loved it, like, you know. And it was just like, are you a murk anyone? I feel you get murked with a stain that's still, and a flame man's face like grill. Boys get it like meal, he's on the height thing, I make him chill like Madrid, I'm real, tech man higher than pill, won't stop suing to my house on the hill. When it comes to the mic, I got skill like smoking, I kill. You get jet like Jill. I'm ill like Will. Give your wife your thrill. All them kind of bars, like,
nice.
And it was that like old school, like, you know, that I was just like on it. I was on it, and so, and then I just kind of switched from that kind of grime me to like, you know, it was, it used to be like songs with Meeks, like Foss is in jail, I'm on my own. Bakes is in jail, I'm on my own. This is in jail, I'm on my own. When I grind on road, I'm on my own. When I fiends in the fold, I'm on my own. When I'm out in the cold, I'm on my own. He, you know, like, all that kind of stuff, that. It's just, like, talking about times when, you know, I was with a certain group of people and then they strayed off, they went jail and they went these directions and here and there, and I was still on my own, like, you know, like, and it was just like, oh fuck, like, no crew left, I'm on my own, I gotta kind of fly the flag on my ones, like, you know. And then I started realizing, rah, maybe man ain't as serious as me as music, like, you know, maybe man don't care about it as much as me, like, you know. And then like, I don't know, time was the, like, you know, time would always tell kind of thing, you know, like. And I just kind of stuck to it, and then now I'm in Copenhagen, I'm like, what the heck, doing shows, and like, you know, I'm like flying around, I've been on tours, I've been like, you know, I've been up and down the country. I'm literally living it, living example, like, living manifestation that it's possible, like. But it's been over 20 years, like, of probably just doing music, recording, but just, I think that I just weren't as persistent and consistent as from, like, 2016 to now, or maybe, like, I would even say 2019, because 2016, I still had a job, a side hustle, this, that, and the other, so that just kind of makes me feel like I'm not as serious, you know, with a side hustle and stuff, even though I don't knock anyone with side hustles, because I always did have a side hustle myself, me, Mark Baker. But as soon as I dropped the side hustle and I said, nah, this is where I'm moving forward and this is what I'm doing 100%, putting all my time, energy, effort into this one thing, that's when it started. You know, that's when I was like, raw, 2019, Aura Type Orange, you know, this, that, and the other, la-di-da-di-da, all my days, all my days, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And it was just like crazy.
Should we listen to Aura Type Orange? I think.
Yeah,
that was like my first LP, with Meeks.
And
yeah,
I feel like
sick.
The tape is right in front of you.
Oh, look.
I also
cassette,
feel like,
man,
that was very well received at the concert yesterday.
Yeah,
and
thank
it's
you.
It's a good, after this little walk through your life.
Yeah, thank you.
This is when you started taking it really seriously.
This is when I actually started taking it really seriously.
Focus became clearer.
Focus came clearer, sharp as a whistle and sharp as a, like, straight as an arrow.
Yeah.
Can I ask you something? Because I noticed on the, like, the digital artwork has like one artwork. But the LP and this cassette tape, it has like a different one. What's the story behind that?
So I wanted really and truly, the first, the digital, I wanted people to feel like there's a change within it. I didn't want to feel like, you know, it's the same artwork, because I felt like, for me, physical is stronger than digital for me.
Yeah,
because on a computer, you can't really touch it, feel it.
No.
You know, you don't get a sense of the art, like, you know, in that sense.
Mm.
Even though I love digital, I'm not knocking anyone that, you know, releases digitally and doesn't do.
Well, as we established, it's easier to take on the road. Like,
exactly.
You don't have to bring your disc man.
Exactly.
Let alone a vinyl you can't listen to.
Imagine
on the train.
That. Yeah. That's crazy.
Best of both worlds.
And I just wanted, like, people, that if I'm asking for a certain amount of money from someone, I thought that, like, they should have the best representation of the work in that form of, like, you know, I just felt like it was a much stronger picture. I felt like it was a much just better and gave it a new flavor.